Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, let's see. During the week, it was reported that CEOs of many multinationals around the world who were initially calling for climate action changes amongst big corporations, they're now scrambling to delay the implementation of these changes. It was only a few months ago that these same representatives were urging world leaders to take bolder climate action, but the plans don't seem to be, kind of, let's say, matching up with their actions. So are they all for saving the world as long as they don't have to pay for it? Is that really what it's all about? Well, Ali Sheridan is a lecturer, a sustainability consultant and a PhD researcher at Maynooth University, and she's on the line now. Ali, welcome to the programme. Where will I start? Large corporations, currently, what are they doing to help reduce their environmental impact? I mean, are they doing anything meaningful at all?
Yeah, hi Dave, good to be with you. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting and important time right now, isn't it, for climate action. We're all waking up to just the scale of what's ahead and what we're going to have to do, and no more so than in the business world where, look, we are starting to see big shifts. We're moving away from, you know, the more traditional strategies, looking at things like energy, water, waste reductions, which are all good stuff and has to happen, but nowhere near an appropriate response to the scale now of the climate challenge that's ahead. So what we are starting to see is this emergence of what's called net zero strategies. So we're being asked as a global society, we're being asked here in Ireland to kind of map out our roadmap to net zero. How are we going to get emissions down over the next few decades? So companies have started to put out these kind of strategies for their own organizations and their own industries. And it's the language we've been waiting to hear for a long time. It's the level of ambition we've been waiting to hear. But there is a few red flags with what we're seeing. So we're getting these strategies, but we're not really getting the detail of how they're going to be delivered.
Okay, well then, let me put it this way. I mean, like, the awareness of climate challenge is definitely growing right across every single aspect of society. But if business is responding, are you saying it's really not responding well enough? Be clear, tell us exactly what you're going to do and bloody well go ahead and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we are becoming more aware. I think we always have to remember that this is a climate emergency and a climate crisis, and that is the type of response then that we have to build in. So, you know, what you might be seeing with these strategies is a lot of dependence on the likes of offsets, a lot of dependence on future technology, which may or may not come into the fore, like carbon capture storage, which might help us kind of suck emissions out of the air, but we can't be fully dependent on that yet. And then, like you were talking about, that report from Rolling Stone, you know, we're getting these strategies in one day in a press release, but then we're hearing about lobbying against progressive measures, maybe around carbon taxes and things like that on the other. So we're hearing what we need to hear, I suppose, but we're not yet seeing what we need to see in terms of actual impact on the ground and getting us on that road to net zero.
Okay, actual impact on the ground. I mean, what kind of impact could these big corporations have if they were to get serious about implementing plans to reduce carbon emissions?
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose the initial changes that we're starting to see is obviously big shifts around things like our energy systems, getting off fossil fuels, getting into clean electricity, renewable energy. We're just about scratching the surface, but a way to go on things like the circular economy. So if you think about all the stuff that we consume, all the organizations that are kind of pushing this linear flow of products on us all the time, we just have to get away from that and start using what's already out there, getting that back into supply chains and leaving our natural resources in the ground. Finance is another one, for example. We need to, you know, get the flow of finance away from those activities that are locking us into a more unstable future and getting them towards the green technologies. And then, you know, companies as well, you know, you've got obviously the bigger emitters like the fossil fuels, but there's a whole network and web within industries where companies have real influence over their suppliers, over helping us in our home be more sustainable, that they're not leveraging yet. And then I suppose that the bigger step that we need to take is what comes next for industry, because again, this is a crisis and this isn't just about business as usual being a little bit greener. This is a bigger conversation we need to have as a society about our consumption and what exactly it is industry is going to do in the future and the purpose of business.
Okay, so in other words, all the indirect stuff as well that kind of impacts industry. It's not just the little sort of building of whatever the industry happens to be. Like, it's everything to do with suppliers and all the rest. But like, what about those who would say, look, this is not a kind of a country by country problem. This is a world problem. And if, for instance, other parts of the world aren't going to join in, will our little bit that we might do be enough? I mean, like in today's paper, just this morning, there's a thing, it says Beijing's dirty secret. It says with 1,000 coal-fueled power stations and climbing, China's energy pollution mocks the world's bid to combat climate change. 341 square miles, it's about the size of Los Angeles, which is huge. It's just west of Beijing. They have this thing called the Ningdong Energy and Chemical Industry Base. Now, that would be like more emissions that would come out of the whole of England during the whole time they used coal for 100 years, etc. So if it's that big and that huge, and that's just in 1 year, if that's the case, are people allowed, you know, throw their hands in the air and say, look, unless this whole thing is a big, huge worldwide thing, forget it?
But it is. It is a huge worldwide thing. It's a climate global crisis. You know, at the end of the day, we are now dealing with the reality of planetary limits and everything. You know, it's in our own interest, regardless of what happens abroad or in other regions. We are all facing into the same storm here. And it's in our own interest to take as much action as we possibly can so that we become more resilient to this. And we can put up our hands here and say we're little old Ireland, but we punch above our weight when it comes to emissions. Yeah. We punch above our weight when it comes to packaging waste. And we have huge influence here. Yes, maybe we might be able to achieve the huge reduction in emissions within our borders, but we've never, you know, been limited by our borders before in terms of using our innovation, using our, you know, our smarts, our technology, showing others how it's done and helping them do it. And equally, we are very much part of a global supply chain here in Ireland. And we have to start talking about the risk side of climate inaction as well. So all our organisations and industries here who are dependent on raw materials coming through, who have built their industries on the assumption of a stable climate, and that assumption has been taken away from us right now. So regardless of what's happening abroad, it is absolutely our own interest to do it. And those, just like us, those regions will also have to understand.
I mean, the old cliche of everybody has to do their bit, everybody really does have to do their bit, end of story. So how serious is it at this stage with all the information we have about the state of our planet in relation to climate change? Just how bad is it? And I presume you're going to talk in terms of years or what should be in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, come back to my point that this is such, we're at such an important moment in time for climate. I mean, scientists have been trying to tell us for the last few decades what's coming, but I think only in the last, you know, recent times we've started to really listen. And that's because we've got the documentaries, we've got the marches on the streets. And this summer alone, I think we were bombarded by just example after example.
Yeah, and you've got the science, which is really what it's all about.
Exactly, it was all about, and it has never been, and that's the, you know, that certainty that we can now have in science. We should get power and I suppose confidence from that now to think completely different about how we're going at climate. This can't be about incremental. This has to be about huge reductions year on year. We're looking globally at a 7% reduction year on year in emissions, when, you know, lockdown, for all its restrictions and limitations on our only on our lifestyles, only got about a 5% reduction. So this is a huge ask of our society. It's going to mean we need leadership like never before. We need courage like never before. And unfortunately, one of the things we struggle with as a human race is dealing with future risks. Yeah. We cannot wait until, you know, the sea is at our feet, the wildfires are at our door to take action.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it's a huge ask, tough luck, it is a huge ask, just, you know, but it's an absolutely essential ask. So, you know, the complex challenges that have been used as an excuse for what we might call inaction. Why, and we're talking business here, really, this is about, why are they delaying so much? I mean, is it all about potential profit loss?
Yeah, I'm glad you used the word delaying because, you know, we are into this stage now where it's not so much about climate denial, but the new dangerous kind of response is delay. So we've got a range of reasons that's happening. We've absolutely got a cohort of bad faith actors who are trying to hold on for as long as they can to their business as usual models and squeeze any kind of more profit that they can out of it, and that we really need to be looking harder at, and we really need to understand how to push them quicker away from things like fossil fuels and those really heavy industries. But then we've also got a cohort of industries in the middle who are struggling, I would say, at the moment to understand what their path forward is. They need more clarity. You know, they need more confidence that this is happening, you know, across our global society, that they can start shifting their investments towards climate solutions and investing in upskilling their staff in this space, creating that level playing field. So, you know, even the most progressive companies at the moment sometimes are punished for being more sustainable because their competitors don't have to do it. So we need to understand the realities for industry and make sure that any supports were flowing their way, any regulation and legislation is telling them that this has to be about getting positive climate outcomes as well, you know. And then it's that bigger piece again, is what comes next, right? What's this next era we're into? We haven't been very good at creating that vision for industry to understand their role in that, and some of them are struggling with their identity. But it's, we've got to unlock their, you know, like I say, their innovation, their skills. We need industry with us on this, and we need them going in the
right direction.
So
maybe filthy lucre should go back up to the top of the list. I mean, like, for instance, by the way, we're talking to Ali Sheridan, who is a lecturer and sustainability consultant and PhD researcher at Bournemouth University. 51552 is our text. Maybe, you know, with everything like decarbonisation and net zero this and climate neutral and climate positive and carbon budgets and ESG, and you mentioned the circular economy, are the initiatives delivering change, or is it really only about the bigger transformation that has to happen? And therefore, if I say filthy lucre, what about the suggestion of something like a carbon currency to kind of offset emissions?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if we could buy our way out of this? Yeah. But I think if that's our solution, then I think we've missed the point. You know, this comes back again to planetary limits. And, you know, with offsets, we have lots of questions about them, just like companies are over-dependent on them. Are they actually performing as we hope they would? If everyone does offsets, there's not enough land to go around, you know, and I suppose the most dangerous thing about relying on offsets is that allows us to hold on to that mindset of growth, consumption. And that just can't be the way forward. We have to figure out a way to move on from that and figure out what comes next. So I think offsets are a familiar, maybe a more comfortable solution for us, but we've got to look at the root causes of this. We have ethical questions as well, you know, in terms of where we're buying those offsets and what regions we're kind of limiting their development because we're taking their land as well. So that there's lots of questions to be asked about a seemingly simple solution.
What about people who, we used to call it, say, third world, whose lives weren't necessarily like as great? Certainly when they look at the West, their lives weren't anything like it at all, but they might be getting to that point now. You're saying, wait a second, don't go to that point. Go back to where, like what you used to do, whatever you've done in the last 50 years to make all your lives better, forget about it. Because this isn't about what we can do to have the same lifestyle, is it? Everybody needs to change their lifestyle. So you're asking people possibly who are doing pretty well now suddenly to go back.
Well, it depends how you define, you know, well and back. And
yeah,
you know,
if you take something
like developing nations, it's a really live conversation now as we come up to the climate change conference in a few weeks. You know, we here in the wealthy global north, we have to understand and we have to support regions, skip this fossil fuel dependency phase and help them get onto renewable energy as quick as they can and onto cleaner electricity. But we have to question our lifestyles here around consumption. You know, like I say, this is about planetary limits. It's not just about a greener way of doing things as we do. So it's a difficult conversation. It's a harder one to have. But until we understand that's our end goal, then, you know, we won't unlock the ambition and the creativity that we need to get there. And look, you know, at the end of this, the win is the biggest one of all. We get to continue existing on this planet and potentially create, you know, a wonderful, thriving society that isn't locked into continuous consumption, that isn't locked into, you know, consistent work that maybe doesn't align with values. We can think about this differently, about what it means, you know, to work and live on this earth and what it is that businesses do. So there are bigger questions that we need to have. I'm not sure as a society we're there yet, but otherwise we're just delaying the reality of what has to happen, because again, the science is very clear that we have limits here and we have a limited budget left to go through.
Exactly. And like, as I said earlier, tough luck. It's just the way it is. I mean, we have to talk about respecting the planetary limits, as you say, of what it can take from the population. Realistically though, if corporations don't take climate change seriously, how badly does that undermine people's personal efforts to live more sustainably and do their best to limit their own impacts? Because as I said earlier on, we all have to do our own bit. Then we see corporations pretending to do it and doing nothing.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, corporations could potentially really help us be an ally. For too long, we've put this on the individual, you know, to do the right thing when alternatives aren't there or things aren't accessible to them. I know I spent way too long walking around supermarkets trying to figure out labels and which product was better. Why can't we get to a stage where every product on the shelf is a sustainable one, you know? And I think for people, we need to start moving away from worrying about carbon footprints. Yes, of course, do everything that you can within your means. You know, I've got panels on my roof. We've got an electric car, you know, whatever's accessible to you. Absolutely. But let's start using, you know, your handprint as well, your influence. So pick up the phone and ask your TD what they're doing. Vote for leaders that are going to get us those structural changes that make it easier for us to do it. Call your bank and ask them about a sustainable pension. I think we need to probably redefine what individual behavior is in this space. And again, if we can get corporations all going towards that planetary limits focus, that will redefine, you know, what our lifestyle is like. We won't be buying single use items anymore. We'll be refilling them. We'll be renting them. We'll be using things as a service. And all of that is untapped innovation that again, is not yet unlocked. So if we can shift the end game, the targets for corporations, then we unlock the ability for millions of consumers around the world to start living more sustainably.
Do you think the corporations that we're talking about here understand even the terms that we're talking about, like carbon offsetting and carbon capture and biodiversity and social sustainability and all of these kind of things? Do you think they really, it does a blur past them all?
Yeah, I suppose it differs. I mean, it's getting harder to ignore it because it's starting to bite in supply chains today, you know. It's not just an issue for 10 years' time. They're starting to feel the kind of restrictions being put on them, or those kind of volatilities in price, or however climate is showing up in their industry. I do think we're seeing a lot of delay leadership. So like these strategies, you know, they're great, but they're putting it on that next generation to actually do the hard work and delivering. And then we also have a situation, particularly, I think you mentioned ESG earlier. So environmental social governance, this is the financial industry's language around sustainability, where they've largely written their own rules around what constitutes a sustainable investment. Now, that's starting to change at EU level, but we have to tighten up on the rules. We have to be much more clear about what is acceptable from an industry and a corporation point of view. And you know, largely, even reporting wise, is largely voluntary still at the moment. So we know there's a few things that are going to start changing in the next year that will make that more mandatory for organisations. But again, at the end of the day, reporting isn't action. It's an important step. We need to know where, you know, the hotspots are for carbon.
Yeah. But it's a step.
But it's action that matters.
Yeah, exactly,
so,
yeah.
You know, we need accountability. We need transparency from companies. And that's why we need leadership as well to make sure that that's the landscape they're working within.
All right. Well, then, lecturer, sustainability consultant and PhD researcher at Bernoulli University, Ali Sheridan, thanks a million for joining us on the programme today. But one last one I should mention here, like with the coronavirus, and a lot of people thinking, like, just debunking the science and not wanting to listen to the science and go their own way and thinking it's wrong. I mean, whatever about that argument, on this here, in terms of you have to accept the science.
Yeah, and there's no bigger lesson about COVID, about how we as a society listen to the science, how we reacted to the scale of what the science was telling us, how we, you know, we entered a social contract with each other that we collectively understood the risk, and we each took our own responsibility to do what we could within our means. And it is that exact response, you know, immediate, rapid action, working together, not setting industries against each other, not setting parts of society, all going towards that common goal. And again, you know, again, it's hard to engage with, but there's a huge risk in terms of our ability to continue to survive on this planet. And that is, you know, such a future worth fighting for. So it needs a much more ambitious and rapid response. And we should have, like I say, we should have clarity now and security within the science to be more ambitious, to think bigger, to ask more of each other. Because this is, we are the last generation, me and you, Dave, that can do something about this. So that's, it's a scary, but it's a privileged position. And it's one that we have to take.
OK, well, Ali Sheridan, thanks so much for talking to us on the programme today.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.